to the size of the operation, which seems logical at least, then the number of cars will also more than double.
And you also pointed out that the EIR responses, which came back very quickly, said the report was released on Monday, the final report, was essentially a lot of clippings and snippings, and it would require you to run through the old report with a scissors and a scotch tape, right?
Yes, there's no single document that is called a final EIR. If one wanted to know what the final EIR was, what is being proposed to the public, one would have to take the draft EIR, a 270-page document, and then take 61 very dense pages of additions and deletions that were described in this, what is called the final EIR, and take those 61 pages and take the deletions back to the draft and scratch out all the appropriate deletions.
And you would have to do this within the course of about a week and a half, because that's the deadline is coming up, what is it, on the 6th or something?
Well, the Planning Commission has until day after tomorrow to do this.
Until Tuesday?
Yes. So, and they haven't had this final EIR any longer than any of the rest of us, so they essentially got 8 days to incorporate this this mammoth thing, including 61 pages of complicated additions and deletions, into the old draft EIR to try to get some kind of sense of exactly what it is they are being asked to approve.
So we're running out of time. Maybe what you can do is summarize anything else that needs to be said, and then give us a phone number for folks to call to either get information or volunteer help.
Okay. The basic question here, under all the distraction, is whether or not the boardwalk should be allowed to nearly double in size. The public has a right to identify this as a very unique land use with a number of very specific and significant negative impacts. And if the public concludes that these negative impacts outweigh the benefits, then the public has the right, and indeed should, refuse to allow the boardwalk to expand further. It already attracts 3.5 million visitors per year. It is already the 14th most profitable theme park or amusement park in the entire nation, and problems in the beach flats are directly caused, solely caused, by the fact that most people don't want to live next to that thing. And Ocean Street is a rather unappealing corridor because of the boardwalk. There are numerous negative impacts, and this question has to be addressed and isolated, and the people should be making this decision, not a handful of people on city council who are making a decision which on every level to me seems like a decision much more in favor of the Seaside Company than it is in the favor of the city and the environment and the people of Santa Cruz.
So people should attend the meetings on August
August 4th and 6th, and this thing is actually, the EIR is slated for final approval on September 15th. So the wheels are turning. They're trying to just jam this through the public process, and I hope people will just rise up and say,
at 7 o'clock,
no more.
7 p.m., Loudoun Nelson Center on the 4th and 6th, and also you have a meeting of the Beach Flats Development Group?
Well, we call it the Beach Area Working Group.
Sorry about that. Beach Area Working Group, and that is what time?
That's at 7 tomorrow, every Monday, at the Sierra Club office at 1001 Center Street, next to India Joe's.
Is there a phone number people can call for more information?
They the Beach Area Working Group has a number which I don't have right now, but I'd be happy to give my number, and we'll certainly
and your number
pass
is?
Along any information we have. 423-0170.
We're talking to Phil Baer, a Beach Flats activist. His phone number, in case you want more information on this subject, is 423-0170. Phil, thank you very much. And
thank you, Robert.
We'll talk to you more later.
Yes, sir.
And that was Phil Baer, who's really indefatigable, or indefatigable, if you will, and he's tireless. He goes out there and endlessly challenges this particular issue and seems to be really very knowledgeable on it. I'd like to get some counter response from Scott Kennedy or Michael Hernandez, if any of them happen to be listening, but Scott tends to make appointments to shows that he just doesn't show up for, that he tends to cancel. So if anyone who wants to support an opposition view that supports the Beach Flats, that feels the Beach Flats, the Beach Flats redevelopment, the Seaside Company expansion is a good thing, love to have you on the air. Give us a call at 423-4833, and we can present your perspective, too. But so far, it seems to be, as Phil has said, only city council flunkies and city staff members and Seaside Company employees or consultants are interested in supporting this plan. Although, strangely enough, it's on the fast track. Will wonders never cease? Will folks never finally get around to recalling at least one of these turkeys to turn the other ones back into the proper pen, I should say, to get them back on the right track? One thing about the meetings that were mentioned by Phil coming up this week, I checked the Sentinel today, hardly a reliable source, but the Sentinel has something different. And for those who are trying to get to these meetings, you might want to double check. What the Sunday Sentinel says is that on Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, the Zoning Commission will meet, and Thursday in the evening at 7:30, the Planning Commission will meet, and both of these are supposed to be meeting at City Council Chambers, not at the Loudoun Nelson Center. So I don't know what the truth is. I haven't contacted the City Clerk's office. I can't do that today anyway, nor can anyone as far as I know. But tomorrow, if you want to call the City Council phone line, 429-3550, or the City Clerk's office, which is listed, you can get the true dope as to whether the Sentinel's times of 10 o'clock Tuesday morning for the Zoning Commission at City Council Chambers and 7:30 Thursday afternoon or Thursday evening for the Planning Commission at City Council Chambers is correct. Don't want you to go up to the wrong meeting or miss the right meeting. And we'll be continuing updates on this. Coming up next, we're going to be looking at the issue of, well, take me to a magistrate, those words which some folks are using when they're confronted with a police officer and a ticket book, particularly around vehicular crimes. We're going to have B.E. Smith on the line. B.E. is a constitutionalist, a libertarian, a deeply religious man, a Christian, who believes that crimes without victims are fundamentally government creations. Drug war crimes, prostitution crimes, many vehicular code violations. And the way to deal with a police officer when he comes for you is not to sign your ticket, instead to say, take me to a magistrate. And he expands upon this. We had B.E. on the air about 6 months ago when he was in town, and we called him up yesterday. I called him up yesterday in order to get an interview with him. Before that, however, here are a few famous women that you may have heard of or you may not have heard of whose birthdays fall around early August. On August 1st, we have Calamity Jane, also known as Martha Jane Canary, who was born May 1st, 1852, and died August 1st, 1903. That doesn't sound like August, but for some reason she's mentioned here. She's a European-American sharpshooter, midwife, scout, or she was, railroad woman, mule skinner, stage driver, gambler, range rider, a legend of the American West. She died in poverty in 1903. It was her death date that they're chronicling. A gentle healer and Samaritan who treated the sick and gave generously to the poor, often to her deprivation. She wouldn't hesitate shooting the hat off any man who disrespected her. Then we do have a birthday for Mercedes Mota. That's today, August 2nd. She was born August 2nd, 1880, died March 12th, 1964. She was a prodigious and prolific Dominican feminist intellectual and organizer, internationally recognized for her work, Evolución Intelectual de la Mujer Dominicana, Intellectual Evolution of the Dominican Woman. That's in the Dominican Republic. And on the 3rd, tomorrow's the birthday of Canis, C-A-E-N-I-S. Canis was a woman in ancient Greece who was brutally raped by Poseidon, the ocean god. Angry and humiliated, she asked the gods to change her into a man so that she could injure and murder the male sex. She became a great hero named Canius, fierce and destructive on the battlefield. When she died a heroic death, she took back her female body and enjoyed a hero's welcome in the afterlife. Not quite sure how they got August 3rd for that one, but who knows. On August 4th, We have a death commemoration. Ernestine Rose, born January 13th, 1810, died August 4th, 1892. Boy, that's 82 years later. Agitation is the opposite of stagnation, she said. European-American women's rights activist, ardent abolitionist, temperance reformer, and free thinker. Born in a Polish ghetto, from an early age, she opposed the biblical view of woman as subordinates and went to court to oppose being arranged into marriage and won. She married William Rose in 1836 and then emigrated to the U.S. Upon arrival, she plunged into every aspect of the suffrage and abolitionist movements. She was constantly attacked by established religious forces and conservative feminists for her defense of atheism, in which she considered no place too holy, no subject too sacred for man's earnest investigation, and presumably woman's earnest investigation as well. Then on the 5th of August, we have a birthday commemoration. August 5th, 1848, died August 6th, 1912, Susie King Taylor. First African-American Civil War nurse for black regiments, she taught skills to other African-Americans at the Freedman's School when she was 14. In addition to being a nurse in the black troops, she also taught them to read and write. That's Susie King Taylor. First African-American Civil War nurse, born August 5th, 1848. Ernestine Rose, European-American women's rights activist, died August 4th. The mythical Canis, ancient Greek woman who assumed male form, August 3rd is the date given to her. August 2nd, Mercedes Mota, her birth date, Dominican feminist intellectual and organizer. And, of course, August 1st is the death date of Calamity Jane, Martha Jane Canary, sharpshooter, midwife, scout, good Samaritan, and a woman whose name was assumed by Jane Immler. We called her Calamity Jane Immler. She is the activist whose work, fasting, and organizing is significantly responsible for the creation of the River Street Mini Shelter and the first cold and rainy night shelter in Santa Cruz, the Cedar Street Shelter, not to mention Karen Gillette's current free meal program. Karen Gillette's free meal program, Jane Immler, known as Calamity Jane. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your civil rights talker, Robert Norse, and every Sunday at this time from 11 to 1:30, or sometimes 1:35, if Becca or Reckless, our next talk show host, allows, you can hear lots of interviews, bit of music, and lots of me talking about civil rights issues. We would have you phone in, but unfortunately someone has run off with the money in the free radio till, and apparently we can't get a phone line here. Actually, I'm just kidding around. I'm not aware that there's been any thefts, but we don't have a telephone yet that I know of, and I keep hoping there will be one, because it's really so important to have this dialogue with the community. Let's turn now to B.E. Smith. After a brief musical interlude, stay tuned and B.E. will be with you.
German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. to the war, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese sky, set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't a marching anymore. Now the labor leader's screaming when they close the missile plant. The United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't a marching anymore.
That's Phil Oakes, I Ain't a Marchin' Anymore. And now, B.E. Smith.
Well, we have on the line today B.E. Smith, who's a, I don't know what you call him. Some people call him a freedom fighter up in Trinity County. What do you call yourself, B.E.?
I call myself anything. I would call myself a freedom fighter. I like that. That's...
And you're most famous here in Santa Cruz County, and perhaps even more so in Trinity County, for publicizing the constitutional strategy of telling an officer who stops you for a traffic violation, and rather than signing a ticket, to say simply, take me to a magistrate. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. I've had good success with it. I'm going to keep doing it until the state people listen to me and then quit messing with the people that, like the homeless and the people that can't afford a good lawyer and whatnot.
Well, I understand that up in Trinity County, people were so persuaded by the cogency and effectiveness of your strategy, which essentially requires, because of part of the state penal code, requires officers to not take you to jail and have you sit there for 48 or 72 hours and then take you to a judge, but rather to take you directly to a magistrate. Folks were so persuaded that was a good device to use that people were going around the Trinity County with one headlight out to kind of test this. And when the police stopped them, they would use your approach, take them to a magistrate. And as a consequence, the cops stopped stopping people who had one headlight out. Is that accurate?
Yeah, they usually don't mess with us. If they know us, they don't mess with us.
Uh-huh. I know that you had a favorable court decision. Was it this year or last year on this particular issue?
It was the December of last year, Roland Henry case.
Can you summarize it for us?
Okay. It dealt with a person that got a notice to appear for a broken taillight in Redding, California. Couldn't sign a ticket, and he said, had to straighten. They ended up taking him to jail, and in fact, they kept him in a rubber room naked for 9 hours, paraded them around the booking area in front of female deputies also. But the civil suit was brought by him was really given to the government on the lower federal level down in Sacramento, and Roland Henry's attorney appealed it to the Ninth Circuit Court. They reversed it and remanded it back to federal court, and in that reversal, the judge says that they take you to jail, but they can't put you in jail.
Now, what is the significance of that? They can take you to jail, but they...
The person has to have due process. Jail, or his liberty is taken away from him.
Uh-huh. So, let me see if I understand this. They cannot take you directly to jail, they have to instead take you to a magistrate, is that what they decided?
They have to take you to the magistrate first.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking vehicle code. Now they have to take you to the magistrate first, and if he's not available, now sometimes he might be at a ball game with his little kid or whatever, but they have to have one on call 24 hours a day. So that guy has only 2 hours to get back to the courthouse or the jailhouse to conduct his business if it's needed. And so while they're waiting for him to come back from that ball game, then of course they can take him down to the jailhouse and give him coffee and donuts, but they can't put him in jail.
And how many people that do you know, let's first start with you, how many times have you used this approach?
I tested it 3 different times.
Over what period of time?
Started in 1992.
Okay, so once in 92, and then the other 2 times were more recently?
Well, I got stopped here about 8 months ago in my Corvette, and I was passing 12 cars over a double yellow line, and I got pulled over, and he decided not to take me to a magistrate, so I just came on home.
But that first time in 92, you were taken to a magistrate?
No, I was taken to jail, believe it or not.
And what happened after that?
That's a long story on that one. They finally they didn't make me, but they convinced me that I was going to spend 30 days in jail if I didn't sign a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And that ticket, but from then on, I just been, they don't do nothing to me no more.
Because now they know that you won't sign tickets?
They know that they can't put me in jail for 30 days. They know they can't put me in jail for 1 minute. Otherwise, I'll sue them.
The only successful lawsuit so far has been this fellow's case that you mentioned, who was held in the rubber room and paraded around naked and so forth?
He's the one that's taking for this right now. But you see, his happened in 1992 also.
Uh-huh.
Been doing it for 6 years now.
So after he was really subject to this grueling and humiliating experience by the police, he nonetheless had enough confidence in in the reading of the law that you suggest, that he had, on subsequent stops by the police, he continued to say, take me to a magistrate?
Yes. See, if you sign a ticket, the reason you go to a magistrate, you want to stay in common law, okay? And so in common law, as long as you don't violate another person's body or his property or violate a contract, then you can do anything you want to. Now, if someone takes your liberty away from you or try to extort money, and there's a remedy for you, and you have to know what that remedy is, and that's why you have to start off as take me to the magistrate, because if you sign anything, then you waive that right, and you're going to lose. So that's why you have to be taken to a magistrate, because magistrate, in order to get jurisdiction to bring you from common law into statutory law to punish you, he has to have a complaint and a warrant, and on the warrant they have to be the amount of the alleged injury to the victim. You have to be a victim before you can commit a crime in this country, unless you waive that right. And this is what people do, they waive their right.
But, of course, as a practical person who looks at this and says, how many people are using this approach, how many people are successfully persuading the police not to harass them, I guess my question again is, what's the name of this man who successfully used this approach and is now doing a lawsuit? Roland Henry. Has he ever been stopped again by police, and has he then responded with take me to a magistrate?
I'm not sure on that.
Uh-huh. So, you said you were stopped in 92. You were kind of pressured and persuaded to sign the ticket eventually under threat of a 30-day jail situation. Then you were stopped again 8 months ago, and you responded, in essence, I guess, take me to a magistrate, and they said, let's forget it?
Well, I did it a couple of times in between them. I did it in Redding, California, just a few months after I did it in Weaverville, and then they kept me in jail 2 days, and then they released me, and no charges was ever brought against me.
This was in 1992 as well?
Right, Mother's Day in 1992, I rode Redding, California on a dirt bike with no helmet.
Uh-huh.
For years to the day later, on an anniversary ride, I rode the same route, and no one, in fact, one cop got behind me and put a red light on me, and then he got on the radio, and then he put the radio down, and then he turned the red light off, and then he got alongside of me and passed me.
He decided you were too hot to handle, huh?
Right, they knew who I was. Yeah, I was on a dirt bike and no helmet again.
So what I count here is three actual stops then in your history on this. One in 92, the second one Mother's Day 92, and the third one last year Where you were crossing the line or something?
The line, but I also got stopped over in Ferndale doing about 85 on the freeway in my bed.
And when was that?
It was last year sometimes. I was coming back from a class from down south.
And they stopped you and you said, take me to a magistrate?
Told me to have a good evening.
I see. And you don't think this is a matter of sort of personal courtesy for you, but you think this is a matter of serious concern about a successful lawsuit should they not take you to a magistrate?
Get arrested without a warrant and get put in jail, then you have an automatically cause of action against them. Now you have a right to make them show your due process.
Many claim rights, and I feel properly so, but we are in the middle of a very conservative court system, as you know, and conservative in the negative sense, that it's sort of pro-police and pro-government. Do you think that, I'm going to put it this way, let's go back to the case of this fellow whose lawsuit you said got a successful decision last December. Where is his lawsuit now, and is he any closer to getting any damages for his being falsely imprisoned back in 1992?
I haven't talked to his attorney, Eric Berg, lately, 3 or 4 months ago, but it's back in federal court again. It's in a discovery process right now.
Mm-hmm.
Things takes time, and remember, you know, they've been operating a scam on us for a long time, and they're just not going to give up real easy and say, oops, we're sorry. You know, they're really operating a scam on us, not only in the traffic, but also in the war on drugs. You know, because in this country, it's a free country, and you're born free. And so you have the right to do anything you want to as long as you don't violate another person's right. So that should show you right there that the war on drugs is a scam.
I couldn't agree with you more.
It doesn't apply to the private sector. It only applies to the public sector. See? The people that work for Caltrans, it's illegal for them to cultivate, possess marijuana. But they're exempt if they have a doctor's recommendation, right?
Theoretically, although you wouldn't know that from all the prosecutions of the cannabis clubs.
That's for the public sector. That doesn't apply to the private sector. See, that doesn't apply to me and you. You and I don't belong to the public sector. I'm not a civil service employee. I'm not an elected official. So therefore, I'm not under no obligation to perform. So I can do anything as long as I don't violate another person's right through a body damage, property damage, or a violation of a contract. That's common law. And we still have common law in this country. We don't have common law crimes. That's because they're statutory crimes. That happened in 1872 in California. But prior to 1872, we had nothing but common law in this country. Common law isn't written down. Statutory law is written down. The common law was codified in the statutory law. And now these famous twisters of the word, you know, the lawyers, they twisted the word around where they think that we're subject to the government right now. We're not. We're free. We're free people. And we have the laws to protect that freedom, but we have to know how to apply it.
B.E., have you been doing much writing on this subject?
Well, I try to a lot, but and I'm almost done with my book, but I've only had a ninth grade education, and it was in English. So it was just, it's a long story why I was gifted with this knowledge, but I've been studying common law for 20 years now, and I don't think they can beat me on any jurisdictional issue as long as there's no victim.
Are you having anyone collaborate with you on this book to assist you in the writing of it?
I'm an attorney by the name of Tom Blanco. He's co-writing it with me.
Any expectations of a publication date?
Well, see, I'm under an indictment right now with this medical marijuana that I did last year. I don't know if I ever telling you about it or not.
Summarize that for us. I think you talked about it briefly, but just run it down quickly to us again.
Well, when Proposition 215 was passed, I became a caregiver for a few people, quite a few people, and so I went before my board of supervisors and announced that I was going medical marijuana farmer in Trinity County. And I told them where I was going to do it at and so forth, and I also worked with the sheriff's office about it. Newspapers, magazines, TV came out and filmed me putting them in the ground and so forth, and I didn't have any problem from county guys, you know, they accepted Proposition 215, I assume. But then in the end of September, on a warrant issued by a federal court, U.S. Marshals came in and confiscated 87 plants.
This is last September?
Right now we're in motion stages, and we just won a major motion here last week. We have the prosecutor, who's a Unabomber prosecutor, has been ordered to disclose all discovery to me from day one of why they decided to prosecute me with just 87 plants.
What do you is that unusual to prosecute for such a number of plants?
Sure, the policy is 500 plants on privately owned land and 200 on federally owned land, and I only had 97. No one in the Eastern District has ever been prosecuted less than, I think, 187 plants. He had a gun with him.
He had a what?
But I'm the only person that's ever been there with less than 100 plants.
And is your attorney a volunteer attorney, or you have a relationship, you're paying him?
Yeah, we have a defense fund going, so he's being paid out of the defense.
And for those who want to contribute to your defense fund, how can they do that?
I don't know the address, to be honest with you.
I'll tell you what, if anyone's interested in contributing to B.E. Smith's defense fund around medical marijuana and the right to be a caregiver as provided by Proposition 215, give a call to me here at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll take down your name and number and have B.E. contact you with that information. Does that sound good, B.E.?
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you.
Now, we last spoke about 6 months ago, and you say you've been kind of on the road a lot. Have you found that other folks in other parts of California are also beginning to use this approach of essentially asserting their basic rights? And can you give us some specifics around that?
There's a young lady down in Groveland, California. That's over by Yosemite. Five of them, I understand. She came to my class probably a year and a half ago. So she's done four or five hardcores.
Hardcore meaning like just hanging tough, take me to a magistrate, don't sign, period? Is that what that means?
Co-defendant in the medical marijuana, 65 years old. He did one in Arcata here about 4 months ago. Now, he did stay 3 days in jail before I was able to get back up to Northern California and file a writ of habeas corpus, and then 3 hours later they dismissed him or released him and never charged him with anything.
And so I'm sorry, I think I missed that. A bit of the first one. You said there was a woman in down near Yosemite. Can you run by that again?
A woman, her name's Courtney, and she lives in Groveland, Groveland.
Mm-hmm.
She's done four or five hardcores up there where she lives.
Hardcores?
Take me to the magistrate, refuse to sign a ticket.
Gotcha. Okay.
And
what's the result of those been?
She's never been charged with anything. They always just close their books and leave.
And what kind of offenses does she usually do this around?
Anything that doesn't have a victim. The only time that a peace officer can arrest you in a vehicle code book is under section 40,300.5. And they got to be a victim. See, they always got to be a victim because a crime requires a corpus delicti. In fact, a corpus delicti is the very foundation of a crime. Without a corpus delicti, it can't be a crime.
So, again, we're getting back to the vehicle code book. Certainly, are the feds arresting and charging people under vehicle code laws for marijuana offenses, or are they using another statute book to charge you and Courtney and others with?
They're coming at us under Title 21.
And you're also claiming that it's not just the vehicle code that allows you to use this defense successfully about taking me to a magistrate, but also just that title as well, and the federal codes and the state codes generally?
Oh yeah, you can do it. You can, as long as we've got a writ of habeas corpus, you can do it. And the federal is Rule 3, 4, and 5. And then the state is separate. But the feds have one too. Now, one thing I like to mention about my case in federal court, see, I was never arrested, not in the patch, nor after an indictment came down against me. That was also a first. But they, and I really believe this, they didn't arrest me because they knew I would do a writ of habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm. So, in the state codes, let's suppose you're arrested for some felony, a victimless crime, I don't know, call it prostitution or call it something else, that's a misdemeanor or a felony. What section of the state law would you have people using this defense refer to say, look, you have to take me to a magistrate now or else forget it?
Section 849 of the Penal Code.
Section 849 of the Penal Code. And the federal code, it's rules 3, 4, and 5?
3, 4, and 5. You got to have a warrant and a complaint.
And then the key to enforcing this is the writ of habeas corpus?
The remedy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the great writ of liberty.
Right, I remember it from those old Magna Carta days. Or I guess it maybe was a, that was the, yeah, I guess that was the Magna Carta days.
Barons
revolt. Barons rebellion. So, what about folks organizing to spread this information? Have you seen much of this happening in the last 6 months?
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot more coming up here this month of August. Woody Harrelson and I will be doing a hardcore up here in Northern California during the month of August.
And where will this be happening and when?
It's going to happen in Trinity County.
Uh-huh. Any particular date set for this?
No, not yet, no, because he's a busy person, but he's arranged for me to have a week of his time, and so he's going to do it with me. He's taken a couple classes already. He's a strong believer in American rights, and he also believes that the only way that he can also get the word out to the people is to demonstrate it, and that's what him and I are going to do. And we'll probably do it by riding a motorcycle with no helmet.
And I hope you'll let us know in advance when this happens, so some of us who want to be supportive can either come up or at least publicize it here in Santa Cruz County.
Well, because of Woody's status, I'm sure the world's going to know about it.
Excellent. Now I guess I want to get to the really special area that I'm concerned with, and one of the things we mentioned briefly when you were interviewed on Free Radio back about 6 months ago after you came here to give a couple of seminars and workshops, the question of how homeless people, and this is actually happening in significant numbers in San Diego, California, and I'm going to suggest that they give you a call and talk to you directly. But perhaps just to give folks who are listening a sense of what to do when a police officer, let's say in Santa Cruz County, wakes you up and says you're in violation of Municipal Code 6.36, which makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock anywhere outside in any public area. Sign this ticket, please. What do you suggest they do?
To sign a ticket and demand to be taken to a magistrate immediately.
Refuse to sign the ticket? Is that your suggestion?
Yes, it is.
And
you always got a choice, and I would choose that to not sign the ticket. So therefore, now you got the burden on the peace officer to take you to the magistrate. You don't even have to demand to be taken to the magistrate. Just say I refuse to sign the ticket. You're not required to ever sign anything. The burden's always on them to prove that you damaged someone in this country.
Now, I did this in 1990, actually, not for the same reasons. I was part of a sleep out here in Santa Cruz when, 100 to 200 homeless people came to town in a homeless congress on the 4th of July, and we held a vigil at the post office protesting the same laws that are currently in Santa Cruz, making it illegal to cover up with blankets or to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. And there were about 12 of us who were sleeping at what we called the homeless table near the post office on the sidewalk. Police officers came. Everyone else signed their ticket or left. I refused to sign my ticket. The reason I refused was actually incidental. I refused because the officer who was demanding it was a notorious anti-homeless officer who insisted he didn't know who I was when he clearly did, since he'd arrested me repeatedly in the past. And I felt as a matter of just basic respect, I didn't want to do anything of that sort. So I was taken to jail and charged with an additional charge, which was obstructing an officer. Now, of course, all these charges were dropped. So I suppose that the remedy after that is to get somebody, some lawyer, or possibly to become agile in legal skills yourself and simply sue civilly for damages, right?
Correct. They just pulled a scam on you. They got a couple of days of your time, your life.
Has anyone you know of ever actually gotten any financial, you know, response, successful financial lawsuit, money back for, you know, having done this? From what I understand so far, since 1992, that hasn't happened, or am I mistaken there?
I haven't heard of any. Now, there's a case up in Idaho in 1990 that lady got $1.5 million. She refused to show her driver's license. They took her to jail. And Idaho Code said that they should have took her to the magistrate. She stayed 4 days in jail. Now, she got $1.5 million.
Punitive damages?
Damages, yeah. I don't know what kind of damages they were. She was awarded $1.5 million, and that case is also on the internet.
What was her name, do you know?
Hostrom is the case.
How do you spell it?
S-O-H-O-S-T-R-O-M.
Hostrom. Hostrom. H-O-S-T-R...
Versus Garden City, Idaho.
Versus Garden City, Idaho. Did she have a high-power legal representation? How long did it take her to get that?
I think her husband and another legal person who was an attorney helped her. See, our problem here in California, we haven't got any attorneys yet. Now, my attorney is the first one that understands what I'm doing, so he's going to start taking cases here soon. The one over in Reading, the student Roland Henry's case, he came to my class a couple of times, so he understood what happens. But a lot of times when something happens, a person goes to an attorney, they don't understand what the concept is. Most of your attorneys think that we're subject to the government, we have to do what they tell us to do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't understand private and public. They don't understand that the legislature has a right to make laws against someone that they create, but they don't have a right to make a law against me who created them.
Mm-hmm.
Moral person with responsibilities, I'll take care of myself, thank you.
So, even though you have not been able to recover any damages as of yet, though you had a favorable ruling recently allowing discovery in this medical marijuana seizure last summer, nonetheless, you have had the positive consequence that police officers, when they see you, turn off their red lights and head in the other direction, right?
Well, yeah, I enjoy getting the respect from the cops. When I had my TV show over in Reading for 16 months, I understand that a lot of peace officers enjoy watching my show because I'm fighting for their rights just as much as I'm fighting for the homeless rights. I'm trying to educate anybody and everybody. And so my reward is when someone smiles at me because they understand that I'm trying to give something to them. It's not a monetary award is what I'm after. No way.
Now, although monetary rewards can serve as a deterrent to illicit authorities moving in to harass people in other circumstances.
Right. I filed a suit way back in 92, and I carried it about 6 months, and then I dismissed it myself. I didn't want no money from the state because the public's paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
So all I wanted was the respect, and I got it.
What about in Trinity County, the homeless population? Have you...
Oh, we don't have a homeless population up here in Trinity County.
Really?
No.
What's your largest city?
Beaverville. It's probably 3,000 people.
Ah, right. It's very small. Kind of dispersed county?
When people live off the land or whatever here in Trinity County, we don't call them homeless. They're kind of doing what they want to do, and they get the respect. And they might not have a home. They might be living in a tent underneath the tree, but
so there's no enforcement of no laws or enforcement of laws as there is, for example, in Santa Cruz that make it illegal to sleep in a vehicle.
Oh no, it's a lot different than it is in the city. I think the big problem down there is the business community is the one behind all this homeless because it's cutting into their profit.
Uh-huh.
This isn't the case up here in Trinity County. We don't have that.
Hmm.
I'm sure we would work it out and come to a solution. And the solution would be to help your neighbor.
There was a question that was passed to me. Is
If a cop stops you and asks to see your driver's license, is it a good idea to say no?
Well, if you don't have one, say I don't have one. It's not a driver's license is only required when you're in the public sector. It's not required when you're in the private sector.
Now, this, of course, would be strongly disputed by the DMV and by most standard attorneys and courts. Have you ever actually won a decision on this?
Well, yeah, every time I don't have a driver's license now. Every time I ever got pulled over, I wouldn't show my driver's license.
Now, if you have a driver's license when they pull you over, you suggest you show it to them or not?
Well, yeah, until you know as much as I do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, because, you know, unless the cop's been through it before, you don't know what's going to happen. He's got the gun, you know.
Yep.
So if they ask you for your driver's license, and if you happen to have one, show it to them. If they ask you for your registration, and if you got one, show it to them. Same as insurance, you know. Don't lie to them. If you don't have one, say, I don't have one. Don't need one, either.
Now, the case you cited as being a successful lawsuit came out of Idaho or Montana, you were saying? Idaho, I guess. And my question to you is, has there been much use of this defense in other states that you know of?
I got some Mormon friends back in Utah that does it. He's never got a speeding ticket since he's known me, and that's been about 5 years now. And he's a bishop back there in the church, and he drives fast. But he always says, take me to the magistrate. He knows what to do when he gets there.
Has he told you how many times he's been stopped? Or?
No, but knowing Glenn, it's been a lot.
How about people in big urban areas? Have you known anybody in the big urban centers like New York, Chicago, places of that sort?
There's a girl down in Santa Cruz just did one last week down there.
Really? What's her name?
Her name was Nina. I don't know her last name.
Mm-hmm.
She did sign out after 6 hours being in jail, but the only reason she did that was because she asked for a writ of habeas corpus. They laughed at her and told her she'll never get one in there because they don't have any. And so when they do that, then you might as well sign out and then go and get your writ of habeas corpus from the courthouse and then file it with the Superior Court, because that's the only time that you're able to file a writ of habeas corpus on the outside is when they refuse you one on the inside.
Interesting. Do we know what she was jailed for?
Broken taillight.
And do you have her a number or a contact point for her?